Hi and welcome to this week's Three Legs, Four Wheels Formula One podcast. It's Paul again and as usual I'm here with
Chris,
Lee.
And we've got quite a few things to talk about this week. Obviously we've got the run-up to the Chinese Grand Prix that's happening at the weekend. And there's been quite a lot coming out in the news, especially after Malaysia.
Yeah, because obviously the fallout from Malaysia with the surprise win for Sebastian Vettel, which has been the only big story you've seen on any of the major news channels, really. Nico Rosberg tweeted a picture of himself and his teammate Lewis Hamilton in a small, I can only gather, was a private jet that had been flown to a Mercedes factory somewhere where they'd had sort of an informal meeting. As far as I can gather, it was almost like an emergency meeting to see, like, well, what didn't we do?
Win.
Yeah, exactly. What didn't we do to make sure that we beat Ferrari? Turns out Mercedes just got a little bit lazy.
Yeah.
And didn't use everything to the best of their advantages because they didn't think they had to. Now it looks as though they do have to. Paddy Lowe said something about tyre temperatures and Mercedes not using their tyres to the best of their advantage in the heat of Malaysia. Sounds just like another excuse to me to for finishing second. But that appears to be Mercedes' knee-jerk reaction, was to have an emergency informal meeting just to make sure that they didn't make the same mistake again.
It just shows how serious they're taking the Ferrari threat. It would be easy to think, oh, it must just be a one-off, and normal service will resume in China. But clearly, Mercedes don't think that.
No, but I mean, you can't think that Ferrari have just been sitting back and going, "Oh, good job, boys. You know, what do we do now?" They're also going to be pushing to close the gap, or even increase the gap that they had in Malaysia over Mercedes, working out exactly what they can play to their advantages in order to make sure that they stay ahead of Mercedes and try to repeat what happened in Malaysia.
Well, before the season, did any of us actually think that it would take such a short amount of time for Mercedes to get complacent?
No.
Because I think that's what they've done.
Yeah, they got complacent, they've got lazy. But no, I didn't think... I personally thought they could afford to. Mercedes obviously thought that they could afford to as well. But it hasn't proven to be the case, and Ferrari have caught them napping.
So, what do we think Ferrari are going to be doing to, maintain the gap, extend the gap, or if Mercedes, by their own admission, weren't on top of the game and there isn't really a gap, create one?
Yeah, I think they need to transfer some good luck to Kimi Raikkonen. For a start, he's proven to have the pace, but not the luck so far. And if luck swings Kimi's way, I'd be interested to see exactly what he can do. But you've got to look look deeper into the Ferrari team, really, and have a look at the design of their car this year. We know that Rory Byrne has been sort of in the background, working for Ferrari, but working with the designers. And, what influence is he having? He must have had a huge influence.
If he's not in there on a hands basis of building, just the work he could have done to streamline the whole operation would have been invaluable, you'd have thought.
Well, when he came in last time, it turned him around completely.
Yeah.
You go back to the start of the whole Ferrari revolution when they brought Schumacher in, built the team around him. Took Rory Byrne from the all-conquering, at the time, Benetton team, even if some of what they did wasn't 100% legal. And
wooden planks, anyone?
explosive refuelling rigs.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sure Jos Verstappen hasn't given that advice to Max yet.
Close your eyes.
SPF 50, I think, for car use only.
Yeah.
But no, when Ferrari brought Rory Byrne in last time, as one of the changes, obviously along with Ross Brawn, but the car suddenly became a lot more competitive. Yes, he would have been working with Schumacher to perfect the car, but Rory Byrne would have had the initial input. And if he's there doing it again, then maybe this season isn't going to be as one-sided as it was first thought.
No, it could be a two-team race rather than a two-driver race.
Someone needs to challenge, because I don't think Nico is going to.
it's that psychological, but is Nico
beaten?
I think he's trying to play. We think we've touched on it in one of the previous podcasts. Mm-hmm. He's trying to play the psychological advantage too early on. He needs to do his talking on the track and not be too concerned. We're trying to get in the head of any other racer, let alone Lewis Hamilton. He doesn't need to do that at this stage of the season. Do it when, you know, a bit further down the line, because Nico will have his opportunities to beat Lewis and, you know, to win races, and he's just got to make sure he takes them. But after the first two races, he can't be, as we saw in Malaysia, what looked like blocking a qualifying lap and, you know, then saying, oh, Lewis is driving like a champion. You can't say stuff like that and try and play the psychological games this early on. It's not going to work.
I know we don't want to talk about this very much because, like, we've covered it a couple of times now in the last couple of podcasts. But in the light of Hamilton, I think all but officially announcing it, has re-signed with Mercedes.
Yeah, the BBC were reporting that it could be worth up to £27 million or $1 million.
£25 million a race is what they were.
Really? That's crazy.
A season.
I was going to say that's stupid.
I was going to say no, it can't be a race. But yeah,
the crazy thing about that is if Nico was already beaten before, and your team just basically turned around and said, this is how valuable we think this lad is, you know, that's got to affect you.
Yeah, you know,
because what can Nico be on? £10 million a year for that, I reckon.
Oh, how does he afford to cope on that?
Oh, it's, well, bless, but
all that media training must take its toll.
But it's literally like saying we think Lewis is worth two of you.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
So back to everyone's favourite subject this season: Fernando Alonso's crash.
Or was it?
Well, we know it was a crash.
It's getting to the point where we're going to have to do a separate podcast, just like the Alonso cast.
The Alonso newscast.
Yeah.
This week's news story is, yes, there was a crash. Yes, he went to hospital. But according to German motorsport journalist Michael Schmidt from Automotor und Sport, he received two doses of sedatives.
Which is why he was in hospital for so long.
Apparently so.
Yeah, this is doing the rounds on social media and various Formula One websites at the moment. He was sedated at the scene of the accident at first, and then again at the hospital.
At the track hospital. He'd actually been sedated twice before they got him into the actual hospital. It was the medical centre track where he got the second dose.
But there we go. Perhaps that's the... This could be the issue, and... you know, I mean, I've been knocked out unconscious before, and I've been kept in overnight for observation. Then you let me go, but then, you know, I'm not worth millions of pounds to a multinational corporation.
Rambo, you've not expendable.
Exactly. whereas Fernando Alonso obviously has many millions of dollars insurance upon his head, so. I think maybe they tried to take too much care of him and accidentally got it wrong, but it appears to explain why all the mystery surrounding why he can't remember things.
Yeah, apparently it's now there's a four hour missing gap in his personal time frame rather than a 20-year one.
So he was abducted now.
That one hasn't been mentioned yet, but I'm sure that'll come out sometime. So stay tuned for next week's episode of Fernando. Just what did happen?
Yeah. Bom, bom, bom.
And while we're on the subject of not very major stories, Roberto Meri, apparently he's going to be getting a contract extension.
Yeah, Graham Loudon has apparently been very impressed by his contribution, shall we say.
So his check cleared.
Yeah, his check is cleared, basically, yeah. It looks like instead of being the driver for the opening rounds, as it was when he first signed, he may keep a seat for the remainder of the season. Whether or not that's down to other issues that Manor have been having and he's just the easy option to hold on to, I don't know. But
it's Will Stevens' turn to drive this week, isn't it?
Were they incapable of running two cars at the same time?
Yes, because they only run one. It's a simple answer, isn't it?
Yeah,
of course we were capable of running two cars then. Why didn't you run two cars?
Loudon has said that was complete nonsense, but you look into it, it does seem as though it could be more truth in it than first seemed.
And it gave Force India something to moan about.
Force India are...
They're the only team that they can pick at now.
They're the playground bullies, aren't they, really, yeah. Force India? They're bullying everybody below them. They're bullying everybody in front of them. Yeah, they're just not being very nice at the moment, Force India.
No.
But then that's up to them.
Moving over to a real story now, and a team of the future, because both the drivers are, well, a little on the young side, shall we say. Toro Rosso. Interesting things coming out about Renault, apparently. Lee, you've got some news on that?
Well, apparently there's a chance that the Toro Rosso is going to be rebranded with Renault colours, back with the yellow and black thing, to give Renault more exposure and possibly heal up some of the damage that's already happened between Renault and Red Bull.
Or Renault and new Ian Horner.
Yeah. I find it interesting. It makes sense for them because there's not a lot of good press coming for them at the minute because of the arguments they've been having with Red Bull. And the only reason like they had, with them just being an engine supplier, their name was only really up there when Red Bull was winning everything. So a permanent place on the grid would be good for them.
I think Renault are the second most successful engine manufacturer in Formula One history. I'm sure someone will correct me on that if I'm wrong, but I think that they are behind
behind Ford and Ferrari.
Ferrari, Ford, and then Renault.
Yeah,
and it's strange to think that they're in this strange battle with them, with the team that they're supplying their main engines to. But Franz Tost from Toro Rosso said that it was, he would welcome a Renault, welcome Renault taking over the team, essentially. And that's been backed up by what Helmut Marko has said this week. He's come out and said it, but Christian Horner had something to say, sort of in the opposite, didn't he? Although sort of match shits was pressing the destruct button, it might leave Red Bull to pull out.
Yeah, well, it's like what we were saying last week when we talk about if they fall out completely with Renault, who are they going to get engines from if there's no one sat there like an Audi in the wings with an engine ready to bolt in the back of it? And Christian Horner sort of said that maybe if Renault has its own team and Red Bull aren't getting the premium Renault service because they've got their own works team, that maybe Red Bull would have to be forced to pull out of Formula One because of this. But it seems to be like if Christian Horner gets a cup of coffee that's too cold at the minute, it's grounds for maybe Red Bull pulling out of Formula One.
Now, I think Christian Horner's in a position at the minute where he's not used to not being the big gun. There's always a faster gun in the West somewhere.
I think the crazy thing for Red Bull to be throwing the weight around like this and sort of crying a little bit is because, I mean, they've won four championships back to back. You know, it's one of the most successful teams now in Formula One history, and they were brought in, and embraced by Formula One. Yeah. You know, really, really well. They were given the extra money, like prestige teams get. And is it a bit a case of like biting the hand that feeds you a little bit here? Because it's not healthy for Formula One.
It's not healthy for Formula One, no. And it also eats back to what we're saying about more manufacturers taking over teams. But I'm wondering if it's like a severing of the ties with Renault, in that Red Bull do have somebody waiting in the wings to sign an engine deal with, and they've said to Renault, sorry for everything that's happened. We've given you some bad press. You haven't really met our expectations. Have our junior team as your team. Here's your sort of like golden handshake deal. Whether the drivers will be still part of the Red Bull driver program or not, I don't know. But I'm wondering if that would be part of the deal. You have the junior team, we'll go somewhere else.
Why would you bother if you're going to have if you're going to have a new engine and there's something else?
Maybe it's part of the new engine deal. Maybe it's part of the new engine manufacturer might be, we're only supplying one of your teams, we're not going to supply both.
You'd fancy, though, that the extra data that must come from having two teams that are so connected feeding back into your engine must be invaluable for, well, you'd think it would be.
You would have thought so, yeah. And also, Toro Rosso are outperforming Red Bull at the moment.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that. First two races of the season, they've sort of left them in the shade a little, so it's...
I wonder if there'll be a smash and grab on personnel, because obviously there's been something, someone in Red Bull has put something together on that car that works really well, and it works better than the Red Bull because it seems to be easier to drive.
Yeah.
So I wonder if the main team is looking down their employee list and going, Dave comes here next year.
And Jeff goes. Jeff, if you work for Red Bull, Look over your shoulder, mate.
So they've got the young driver program and the old mechanics program. So we've got China coming up this weekend.
We do indeed.
Yes, another early start.
I don't think it's too bad. I think it's around about sort of Malaysia kind of time. We're not talking Australian middle of the night.
6 a.m.
6 a.m. Yeah, it's not so bad. Nah, it's okay. Nah. It's not quite Australia time, is it? No. As we were saying.
Just to get the plug in now, join us for the live blog. We'll be putting our thoughts down during the race.
We will be, if I can get up in time.
Yeah, we could get an automated bacon cooker.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got any comments to add, you know, or to give to us before or during the live blog, I'm on Twitter at Flood21.
I'm Pablo100.
I'm Lee_Drummer.
And of course, at 3 Legs 4 Wheels, and that'll get through to all of us at once.
It will do, yeah. And you know, it's great. It is actually great to hear from you when we're doing the live blogs or beforehand. If there's something that perhaps you spotted that we've missed, or you know, there's something you think we've got wrong, we'll of course listen to you and get you to join in on the discussion as well.
But moving ahead to the race, what takeaways do you think we're going to get from it?
Sorry.
We got that in before anyone else did.
Yep. I think.
But what are we going to see this weekend?
Normal service resumed, I think. Mercedes pushed by Ferrari, but will be ahead of them, I think. I think, as we've already touched on today and last week, Mercedes got complacent. They know they can't afford to do it anymore. Although Vettel does have the hunger now, doesn't he? Really?
Yeah.
And Kimi needs to prove a point.
I was just going to say we're going to see Kimi with a bit between his teeth.
I hope so.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, fourth place in that Malaysia race was fantastic. The pace that he was on, he should have been well up there with Sebastian, but you know, he just was unfortunate to get the puncture so early on. But I'm really looking forward to seeing Kimi in an incident-free race.
Yeah,
given free rein and sort of see what he can do.
Yeah,
it was a cracking drive for him to finish fourth. Yeah, after the problems he had.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. I mean, Mercedes do have a good history at China. In there, you know, since they started up again in 2010, Rosberg was the first one to win in the modern era Mercedes. It was that 2012, was it?
2012, yes.
2012, yeah. And then of course the first. First year that Lewis and Nico were teammates, you had the radio battle of Nico screaming to get past slower Lewis Hamilton, and the team said, no, stick as you are, stick behind Lewis. I think Lewis got the final podium place.
I don't think you'll have to worry about that message this year.
No, and then we, last year, of course, Lewis Hamilton won the race quite comfortably in the Mercedes dominance of 2014.
I think we're going to see something close. I think Ferrari obviously improved. The win last time out proves that, and I think it's going to be tight. I think we'll see a Ferrari breaking up the Mercedes drivers on the podium.
That'd be an interesting one.
There will be a Ferrari finishing ahead of the Mercedes. That is going to be my prediction for the race.
Yeah, that's a fair prediction.
I've got a funny feeling that Ferrari are going to be stronger than what you'd imagine them to be.
Yeah, they may take another step up, and you may end up seeing two Scarlet Ferraris ahead of two Silver Arrows.
Can you imagine the money that is being poured into that car at the minute after that win?
Yeah,
so early in the season.
Yeah.
I'll be interested as well to see whether McLaren can take more steps forward.
I will be, yeah. Just quickly going back to Mercedes-Ferrari battle. I know that Mercedes have updates coming, which they were going to wait until Europe for, but they're thinking of bringing them forward a little bit because of Ferrari's pace.
Like we said earlier on the podcast, it shows just how serious they're taking Ferrari. You know,
they should do, yeah.
How serious they're taking being beaten by it. So.
I think if they've got updates to bring in, bringing them in now would be the best idea, because don't forget we're on back-to-back races.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's going to be straight off from China.
Yeah, yeah, anything that's in China is in Bahrain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just on that, we just hope that Manor have actually brought enough spares with them to build two cars.
Well, yeah.
They have to run two cars this weekend, don't they? They're going to be in trouble if they don't.
Yeah, I think they will find themselves in some trouble if they don't run two cars for at least a competitive day of the weekend, whether they choose to run them both on Saturday or not. Then mysteriously pull a car out of the race on Sunday remains to be seen.
I think it's if they do that now, it's going to be too close, isn't it? You've got there's already an eye on them for that. You know, you're not allowed to run a one car team.
Yeah, there's an eye on them. It's not by a TV director. I'm still waiting to see one on screen.
Yeah, I mean we applauded Roberto Meri for finishing the race in Malaysia, yet we never saw him from the word go.
Here's a question. Well, and I know it's not part of the preview, but I just thought of that. Should we allow one-car teams?
If it fills the grid up, I don't see why not.
But you have in MotoGP, don't you? You have your single...
The satellite teams.
Satellite teams.
Yeah.
So if you've got... I mean, I can't remember, like, is it something like... $60 million it costs to put a Formula One car together.
Yeah, I mean, you could see Caterham come back, couldn't you?
Yeah, but if you got say $60 million to build one car, you've instantly got $120 million for one car.
Yeah, I think though it's in the Concorde agreement that Formula One will provide all transportation to all the races, but all teams have to ensure that both cars are running at the event, because you go back to the '70s and you used to get local drivers with their own built car, effectively, taking part in a race that they could get to.
Yeah.
A race that constantly gets repeated is the 76 Japanese Grand Prix. And about a third of the field was made up of Japanese drivers that were taking part in the ongoing Japanese Formula One Championship at the time.
Yeah.
Just entering their car in that race. And, well, they were competitive.
Was this back in the day where you actually had to qualify...
This is
76 Japanese Grand Prix was the race where it rained so hard
that the fastest lap, however, was won by a local driver, because he had what they called monsoon tyres on his cars, which were like ultra wet and then some.
Well, they did run those, didn't they, for a while in the late 90s. Yeah. Monsoon tyres. I think it was before the days of intermediates, so I might be wrong, but you have wet and monsoons.
Yeah.
And then I think the wets just became intermediates, and the monsoons just got called wets again. Mm. But yeah, I mean, it's...
It's an interesting thought with the one-car teams, but... It will take all kinds of legal wrangling, and we know how well that goes down within...
I suppose when you've got the power teams up there wanting three cars, the last thing they're going to want is to allow cars to run one to one car.
That's it.
Because they're never going to get their three-car teams to do that.
That's it.
That is good. But moving back down the grid, we've looked at Mercedes, we've looked at Ferrari. Williams need to do better this time as well.
They do. They do appear to be the third team at the moment, they're sort of stuck in between the front runners and the midfield.
And Rob Smedley said this week that they need to work on the pit stops, because that was an issue for them.
It's been an issue for a few people, I think, so far this season. But aerodynamically, the car looks pretty good, but performance wise, it's not quite as far forward as I think the team hoped it was going to be. I think they were hoping, they were hoping it might be a Mercedes beater. It isn't, quite frankly.
No.
It's not a Ferrari beater.
It's not a Ferrari beater, no. But they've proven that they can race, and they're up there probably at the moment. The third, you'd probably say they're a solid third ahead of everyone else who's behind them. With only Mercedes and Ferrari ahead of them. But it was disappointing for them, because they thought they'd only have Mercedes ahead of them.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see whether they've got some more bits on the car.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with updates, of course, because we've got this race, and then, as Paul rightfully just mentioned, Bahrain the week after, and then we're into European territory.
Then we've got the 3-week break before Europe, where there's going to be all kinds of development going on.
Well, I remember reading something that saying that rather than like extra bits, like extra toys that could be stuck on the car, it could be just as something as simple as Mercedes giving them better software.
It could be something like that. And also, with Europe just around the corner now, I'd just like to point out, I predicted that we'd probably see Ross Brawn back on the Formula One grid by the time it got to Europe. Those rumours have sort of died down a little, haven't they? But do we still think he might reappear with his fishing gear?
Quiet, but four weeks to go, you never know.
No, you don't. It's just one of those things.
The other thing I'd say now is it seems unnecessary.
It does.
Yeah. So
I think he'll be able to stay fishing for a while.
Perhaps.
Unless he turns up at another team that needs help.
Manor. or McLaren. That would be a turn up for the books, wouldn't it?
We'll get to the M-named minnows later.
Yes, we will.
I never thought I'd say McLaren.
No, I know, it's horrible.
Toro Rosso, are we going to see the a similar performance to what we've seen in both races this season?
Oh, so they've been doing well.
Yeah, I don't see any reason why not, because, boy, have they proved us wrong, as I did say last week.
They're completely fearless, they're young drivers. They'll just do. I mean, Max Verstappen was fantastic in Malaysia, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, we've never been so wrong.
Never. And I've never been so glad to be wrong either.
Yeah. In all four episodes of this podcast, we've never been as wrong as we were then.
Absolutely.
They're not ready for Formula One.
Oopsie. Yeah. But yeah, it's Toro Rosso are still going to be outperforming Red Bull. Toro Rosso at the moment are looking like the fourth team behind Williams in Formula One. I mean, yeah, the first race in Australia, they sort of mixed it up with the Saubers. But there are an awful lot of non-starters and retirements in that race.
A strange race.
Yeah. You know, so but yeah, Toro Rosso do look as though they're edging ahead of their parent team at the moment.
I want to see Danny Kvyat do something as well.
Other than moan.
Yeah. I was suspect about the choice of drivers when they brought him in. I realise that's what the junior team's for, is to feed up the younger drivers. But it seemed very reactionary. Seb leaves, we're going to get Danny in, it'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, it was because the same morning that they announced that Sebastian was leaving, they announced that Daniel Kvyat would take his place, which we all at the time thought was very harsh on Jean-Éric Vergne.
I only think that happened at the same time because they wanted one surprise in the press release.
Yeah.
Seb leaving wasn't a surprise.
No, we knew it was coming, we just didn't know when.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was... But yeah, as you say, the young drivers go up to the main team. I mean, if you're Carlos Sainz or Max Verstappen and something happens to one of the drivers at Red Bull, are you going to want to go to the Red Bull team? Because
I don't think it would happen mid-season, though, would it?
I don't think they'd do it mid-season.
But I mean, at the moment, I would stick with Toro Rosso.
At the moment, and again, this is another one where we've been wrong. Moving from Toro Rosso to Red Bull right now is a step backwards.
Absolutely. I mean, and Danny Ricciardo's going to be knocking on the door of really, Christian Horner and saying, excuse me, what's going on here? Why is this junior team ahead of us? I left this team to come here thinking that I would be... You know, able to.
It's not the first time they've been ahead of the.
No, no, it has, but I mean, it's.
But fair enough, the engines were different last time, wasn't it? Because Toro Rosso had Ferrari.
But it looks consistent. This is the thing. It looks like it's going to be a consistency.
But do you believe, though, that, especially when we get to Europe and there's more updates coming on the cars, that Red Bull will jump Toro Rosso?
It's possible, because the European races, more people join the teams because of it's a logistical thing.
Yeah.
It tends to be only skeleton staff and essential travellers who go with them to the flyaway races, unless, of course, you're fighting for a world championship, in which case you send everyone out you can to do the job towards the end.
You're limited, aren't you? I think there's a 300 personnel limit on a Formula One team now.
Yeah, something like that. But there's no, nothing like that to the flyaway races at the beginning of the season. Mm. A lot of it's working on the development, and you'll see now a lot more people will turn up in the paddock. There'll be a lot more. They'll be a lot busier in the paddock because the teams will bring the people in who they can afford to bring in to the races in Europe.
Which means for Manor, somebody to make the tea.
Somebody to go and buy the Yorkshire tea.
Yeah.
Other teas are available.
Yeah, just nip back to Sheffield, we'll all laugh. Dropping a little further down, we've touched on Force India being the playground bullies.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, who are they going to be bullying this weekend?
Sauber and Lotus. They're going to try and... They're going to try and bully them, I think. I mean, they bullied McLaren at the last race a little bit. Jensen really wasn't having much of it, though, was he?
No.
We touched on the fact that, you know, Jensen had a DRS open on the straight and Perez still managed to pull up alongside him without DRS, which proves the power that the Mercedes engine has over the Honda engine at the moment. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, McLaren will be sat behind Force India.
Do you think?
I think so, yeah.
I think McLaren will jump Force India this weekend and be up round by the Toro Rosso.
It's possible. I mean, it looks as though they turned their engine up a little bit in Malaysia and paid for it with a double retirement.
Well, don't forget that after the Australian Grand Prix, Ron Dennis turned around and said, we need to reassess how we go racing.
Yeah.
Which I think they got Jensen to the end in Australia.
Yeah.
But it was on. It had been booted in safe mode, hadn't it, that car?
Yeah, it had, yeah.
So,
press F8.
Yeah. I hope there's a finish. If they can have the same pace that they had in the last race and finish, I think you'll find a point or two going McLaren's way.
Is Jensen's moustache a protest at the Honda engine? Will he shave it when Honda get good?
That's an interesting thought.
I think it'll be gone this weekend.
it's not moustache, it's moustache.
Moustache.
As he says.
Sorry, yeah, moustache.
Jensen Button's moustache.
Yeah. Jensen Button's moustache. Yeah.
I'm not sure where that accent came from.
No, I don't know where that is or what's going on. Sorry.
But yes, anyway, so we think Force India are going to be bullying Sauber and Lotus.
Sauber and Lotus, yeah. I mean, if you want to start bullying Pastor Maldonado, Romain Grosjean, that's up to you. I mean, if you come off better, then...
Well done.
Yeah. Oh, I'll come out of an overtaking move on Pastor Maldonado and my car is still intact.
Don't forget, it's not his fault. He is a victim of others.
He has come out and said that this week.
That is one of the more entertaining press releases that we've seen.
Yeah. It is, because even in that first race in Australia, where you might be able to say that it wasn't his fault at the second turn crash, even Felipe Nasr, who ended up touching him for the accident, as you said, yeah, he squeezed in a bit too close. He should have used more of the track on the outside and realised that there was something going on to his left. And that was Nasr's first Grand Prix.
Well, yeah. At the end of the day, you can have people that cause accidents. You know, that's obvious. You can go in too hot and you can make a crash. But on the other side of it, some people stop accidents happening.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't understand how you could think after all this time of Formula One, hang on, maybe I'm the problem here. Yeah, well, that would be my logical thinking here, if I were in that situation. But it doesn't appear to be Pastor Maldonado's. Maybe it's not the racing driver's logic, but it's... Grosjean appears to have calmed down a bit, but is nowhere near as fast as he was. And Maldonado is... just as crazy as he always has been.
I think I've said it before in a podcast, Romain Grosjean is either fast and in the wall or slow.
And terrible.
Yeah, there's no middle ground.
He did go a bit of tarmac skating, didn't he, in Malaysia, when he tried to overtake Perez and then cut right across him. That was interesting. But penalties for those drivers this weekend?
Guaranteed.
Yeah.
Guaranteed. And I think we'll be seeing Maldonado with more points on his super licence and inching ever closer to that first ban.
Yeah, that will be interesting to see if we do see a ban in the 12-month rolling.
Well, you've got to hope for him because he's striving.
You know, he's giving it a go.
He's putting the hours in.
Yeah. What have you got to do to get a full ban?
I think they might be...
try and kill Fernando Alonso. Yeah.
They might be hesitant about banning him because, obviously, we've got Julian Palmer sat waiting in the wings for Lotus. And along with Julian Palmer, you get his dad. I know I keep going on about it, but Jonathan Palmer.
I like Julian.
Keep Jonathan Palmer off the TV.
I like Julian, though. I want him to get a drive. Yeah, so I wouldn't mind betting that he replaces one of the drivers next year at Lotus.
Julian Palmer.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Well, he won't replace Pastor Maldonado, I suppose, because there's too much money comes with Pastor, but...
Depends when Maldonado's contract with the Venezuelan Tourist Board government comes to an end. He's got the guaranteed money that he's bringing into the team with his national sponsorship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But on a serious point, are they actually going to... are they going to get to the point where they think, well, he's not actually getting anything positive out of this and our money might be better spent somewhere else? And a Maldonado without sponsorship is probably a Maldonado that is not racing in Formula One.
I mean, yeah. I don't look at Pastor Maldonado and think, I want to go to Venezuela.
No, I certainly don't want to drive there. But
you know, it does translate as bad donation, doesn't it?
But...
Good point. Never thought of that. Maldonado. Bad donation.
You appear to have killed Flood.
That's brilliant. No, I never thought of that before.
loads of stuff. It's a bad donation. It's quite reasonable.
But yeah, seriously, I think when it's going to get to the point where he's getting that much negative coverage, and not just by us, that his sponsors are going to pull out, and that will leave him without a seat. I think Julian Palmer, I'd like to see what he can do in a Formula One car, and I get the feeling that we'll see him on a Friday at some point of this season. And let's see if he can carry on the good work that he's done previously.
Yeah.
Just keep him away from his dad.
Absolutely. And you've lost me completely there, because I've just realised that Romain Grosjean is translated as Big John. Sorry, you've gone all very silly now. But yeah, I mean, I think those cars, the Lotus, the Sauber, Force India, are going to be battling just outside the points, probably. I think the teams that we touched on before are going to be the ones fighting in the points.
It's been a bit of a letdown, the Lotus, hasn't it?
It has a little bit. With the Mercedes power, they should be further up than they are. They looked good at first, but then they faded back a little bit.
Grosjean's put some reasonable qualifying in.
It's better than the Lotus was last year.
Yeah.
With its two noses.
Yeah, I don't know what they were thinking there.
Two noses are better than one. But they weren't.
No. McLaren, they're going to have to turn the wick up again this week.
Can they, though?
Well, they said they've been...
They weren't terrible in Malaysia.
No.
Let's not forget that at one point, Jensen was putting laps in. Almost at the place of the leaders.
Yeah.
Before
he had clear air, yeah. He's putting in reasonable lap times.
I actually think that apart from qualifying's odd, isn't it? Because they don't seem to have any qualifying pace over one lap.
Yeah.
But race pace didn't seem too bad.
Because that's I would think. I'd think that they could maybe turn the wick up for qualifying, because it's just a single lap. Go fast for one lap, get a good qualifier. I don't know why they wouldn't turn the wick up for that, and then back it off for the race. But maybe part firming conditions don't allow them to do that.
No changes until the formation lap starts. After qualifying, one thing that occurs to me is: are McLaren running these first four races as just an extended testing session?
I think they are, yeah, because they lost a lot of testing time. During the actual testing, they keep talking learning curve, don't they? But it's getting a bit silly now.
Yeah. So are we just going to see? Yeah. Okay. The occasional hot lap during the race for the next two races, and then they've got 3 weeks to put all the data together and come back in Europe with 80-90% of what they should be capable of.
I hope so. It'd be good to see. I mean, no one wants to see McLaren at the back of the grid.
No, I mean, I've said in an earlier podcast, I expect Monaco, with it not being such a fast. Yes, it's not fast. It's not. There's not the can't think of the word, but there's not such a point in having a powerful engine. It's not an engine circuit. I think from there, and then going to Canada, where it is important to have a good engine in Canada. That will be the telling point for McLaren. If they haven't got it together by Canada, they're going to struggle even in the second half of the season, I think.
I think that about covers everything for this week. We will be back same time next week, looking back at China and previewing Bahrain.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, keep checking back to the site, because we'll be getting new stuff up on there as we go. And as we said earlier, watch out for the live race blog on Sunday morning.
Yeah, we'll see you then.
So until then, see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.